Welcome to episode 15 of the Rescue Swimmer Mindset Podcast. I'm Cody Wright. Today's episode is going to be the last in the book breakdown series where I'm going through my book and breaking down each chapter and covering some of the most important sections of each chapter and what I kind of wanted to highlight and talk about more than I could in the book, and just kind of update things that I learned along the way. So if you have been following along, we stopped on page 83, I believe, on Thursday's episode. So today I'm going to continue on with the last section of this chapter and cover a topic called visualization. And I think this is a really important topic, something that I use a lot in training. And while I was in the last few weeks of Rescue Swimmer School, I used it for a lot of my big tests that I had to pass. I'm going to pick up on the second paragraph, page 84, and I'm going to talk about something called entropy. And I covered this a little bit last week too. I just wanted to highlight it real quick, just for anyone who hasn't listened. Entropy is the normal state of consciousness, a condition that is neither useful or enjoyable. So this is a quote I stole out of a book called Flow, and I'll leave that book in the show notes so you can check it out. It's definitely worth the read. But what entropy is, it's a thermodynamics term, and it is loosely defined as the lack of order. So basically, if you leave something as it is in a closed system and you let it sit there over time, it's going to fall apart and eventually disintegrate. So think of it as, like, for example, you could use like your room. So if you have a perfectly clean room and you're just kind of living in it, going about your daily routine, but you're never stopping to pick up your laundry, or you're not wiping down maybe your desk or other like random horizontal surfaces in your room, it's eventually going to pick up a lot of dust. Clothes are going to pile up. Your bed's not going to get made. It's eventually going to just turn into a mess. And you can kind of think of that as entropy, or the lack of order. So a fix to that is to actively try to improve that situation or clean up your room. So that's kind of how I like to think about preparing for a big test or something. Like in A school, you're preparing for these final multis. That's what I use in the book here. And what you're trying to do is, while you're sitting in your bed at night getting ready for the test the next day, instead of sitting there and worrying about what's going to go wrong or kind of just letting your mind wander, you can use visualization to create that order in your mind and essentially clean up your room and make your mind a tool for success the next day. So I'm going to pick up right below that on the last paragraph on page 84. Prior to and during the early weeks of Swimmer School, I found myself in this situation often while in bed after a long day of training. While thinking forward to the next day, I tended to revert my thoughts towards chaotic and unproductive uses. As I've stated before, I was ignorant about the idea of mental toughness. I was able to graduate in spite of this, though. I only want to relay this advice to you so you may increase your odds of graduating. About 3 weeks into A school, my class received advice from an instructor that had a significant impact on my training moving forward. He introduced my class to the art of visualization. Visualization is the process of imagining an event in your consciousness. You describe it to yourself in such a manner as to trick your brain into thinking the event has already happened. Visualization will be the last mental skill covered in this book. If you are able to train your brain to visualize well enough, you will experience the sensation of already successfully accomplishing your goal. Doing so will give you confidence when you need it most, which is on test days. When your name is called, as you leave the locker room and walk towards the tower, you will already have visualized the entire scenario in your mind. The act of visualization creates the same responses in the brain that you will actually experience. Your brain is tricked into thinking the event has already happened by creating a memory of it. The key to effective visualization, just like the flow state, is about creating the right mental environment for the most effective results. Listed below are the steps recommended. All right, so that was just kind of an intro to exactly what visualization is. So in the next couple pages of the book, I go through and break down these steps, because it's just a skill you can learn. There's steps to get your body and mind into a position that is conducive to visualization. So I'm just going to read through these steps and talk about them a bit. So picking up right where I left off. Step one of visualization is to establish a relaxed environment where you will be uninterrupted for 10 to 20 minutes. While practicing visualization, you should be free of all immediate distractions, similar to an environment where one might practice meditation. So when I was in rescue swimmer school, I would do these visualization practices at night before bed. That was a good time for me. It was a good time when I was kind of winding down, wasn't going to talk to anyone else during the day or during the night, and I was going to kind of end my day on that. If you're someone who practices yoga, or if you meditate, you might have a spot you go to do that, and this could be something you can do in place of that or in that same time. You can do it after or before. I've never really been into yoga at all. I'm just not, just never appealed to me. I've tried it a few times, and I tried meditation a few times, and I also just never really got into it. So if that's something that helps you out, just go ahead and keep doing it. Just know that if you don't like to do yoga or meditation, it's not like really going to hinder you or anything. So step two, this is the second paragraph on page 86. Visualization can be considered a form of meditation. An essential aspect of any meditative state requires an awareness of our breathing. Providing adequate oxygen to the brain will allow for the proper visualization state. The key to providing proper oxygenation relies on taking long, deep breaths, followed by slow, controlled exhales. As you inhale, you should try to elicit a feeling of relaxation, followed by an exhalation focused on relieving muscular tension. Once you have your body and once you have your mind and body receiving proper oxygenation, you are ready for the final step of the visualization process. So step one is just to find a quiet, relaxed environment. Step two is breathing. So what I would do for breathing, and this is something I learned from that instructor that kind of taught us this, or at least what I remember him saying, was you take a good 5 to 7 second breath in slowly. So just breathe in, count to seven or count to five. So once you get to 5 or 7, hold that breath in for 3 to 5 seconds and then let that air out for 5 to 7 seconds. And you kind of repeat that a few times until you kind of get into a relaxed state, and you'll kind of feel your body relaxing as you do that over time. And this is a skill. So the first couple times you do it, it might feel weird or even like kind of hard, but just keep practicing it and eventually it becomes part of your routine. All right, step three. After establishing your distraction-free environment, you're ready to begin visualization. Whether you are preparing for a training session the next day or you have the one-man test tomorrow, the approach is the same. Start by describing the emotions that you'll be running through. Without a doubt, you'll be nervous and eager to begin the test. Try to ignite these feelings while visualizing. If you can trigger them, you will know what to expect come test day. So this step is about, this is really the core of kind of visualization, or what it's getting at. And that is, you're trying to put yourself in the position you're going to be at during your test time or whatever you're preparing for. So you have the one-man test tomorrow, and you know this is a really important test for you and towards getting to graduation. So you want to try to elicit those same feelings that you're going to feel. So put yourself, and I'm going to cover this kind of in the next step, so I don't want to really give it away. Actually, I'm just going to read the next step, and then I'll kind of combine everything into one. So this is the last paragraph on page 86. Next, visualize exactly what you will see as you walk onto the pool deck. Imagine the way you will hold your fins, what the pool deck looks like, the water surface, the tower on the opposite side of the pool, and the path you will take to the tower. Try to imagine the smell of the locker room and the pool deck. what the water sounds like as it hits the side of the pool and how the light hits the water. This list could go on and on. The essential function is to place your consciousness in the state that it will make you feel as though you are actually there. Continue by visualizing how you will enter the water and approach your first survivor. Although each test and practice individually will be different, the techniques for towing and handling the scenario will be the same. While visualizing yourself towing an instructor, imagine the worst case scenario and how you will respond to that if your fin strap breaks and you have to complete the test with one fin. Visualize and determine how you will react if you lose your mask during an escape, how you will tow your survivor, complete your safety checks, and be able to breathe at the same time. Both situations described happen often during school. During most practices, you will have the opportunity to take a timeout and fix your gear. The instructors want to see how you will react to unforeseen events. Okay, I read that one section wrong. That didn't make sense to me, so I went back. All right, during most practices, you will not have the opportunity to take a timeout and fix your gear. The instructors want to see how you will react to unforeseen events in an evolving and controlled environment. Your reaction gives them a window into your head, showing how you may handle something similar in a real search and rescue case, at which time there's no opportunity to turn back and it may be your life and many others on the line. Okay, that's a little long and was kind of hard to read. I can't read my own writing. So basically, steps 3 and 4. So step 3 is about eliciting those emotions that you're going to feel, and step 4 is about actually visualizing them. So when you combine them, you're really just trying to walk through the entire scenario that you're going to be going through. And as with any complex event, whatever you walk through in your mind is not going to be the same as what actually happens. But those feelings that you're going to get when you start to panic, when something goes wrong, or you get turned on and you're out of air and feeling very uncomfortable, you can elicit that feeling and kind of try to walk through the steps in your head as you're feeling that during visualization. So a lot of times what I would do is imagine myself towing my survivor towards the basket for like the one-man test, and he turns on me, puts me in like the chokehold or whatever. So I immediately try to elicit how I feel. Like during the practices, the instructors do that to you, so you know exactly how it feels and kind of the emotional spike that you get, or that sense of like maybe you get a sense of adrenaline, a rush of adrenaline, or a sense of fear. Whatever you get during that moment, you can elicit that during visualization. So I'd get kind of like that immediate panic when the instructor turns on me, and I would elicit that in my visualization, and then I'd start to go through the steps in my head as to what exactly I would do. So I have, you kind of like are supposed to duck your chin and like tilt to the right, and then you go underwater with your survivor. So I would just go through those steps in my head, and then I'd practice finding the pressure points I had to find, and then I'd practice getting the survivor turned around and back into a tow. And then I'd imagine myself towing the survivor all the way to the basket, putting him in the basket, and giving the ready for pickup signal and swimming away. So, and I'd run through that situation 10 or 20 times in a night. And what this did is mentally kind of prepare me and settle my mind and give it organized thoughts to avoid it from kind of going off on a tangent and thinking about the worst case scenario. So that is essentially like the core of visualization and what it's good for. It's not this like magic woo-woo-y kind of thing that's out there and something to be like thought of as a joke or not to be taken seriously. It's a real thing, and if you follow the steps that I just laid out right here, you can do it, and it will be effective at calming your nerves and making you really the most optimally prepared you can be for a test. And of course, that's given you have been in the pool practicing the right escapes and practicing towing a survivor and doing all your checks. So I'm going to switch over to page 88 now and just kind of close off visualization. And this is the second paragraph on that page. Like any of the previous techniques mentioned, it takes constant practice in order to properly utilize the skill of visualization. If you are reading this while still preparing for summer school, then you have a great opportunity to begin to put these techniques to use and build on them as you advance through your training. This concludes the final portion on mental toughness in this guide. Next, I'll move on to a small section consisting of physical training tips and recommendations. Although brief, I wanted to mention a few of the training methods I used to add a little variation to your current training. So that's just kind of explaining the last few pages of my book. And that really concludes the rescue swimmer mindset, the portion of the book that is focused on developing your mindset and being able to use your mind as a tool to make become a better candidate for these selection processes. So now I'm going to kind of just talk about what the last section of the book covers, and it's just a few kind of short pages, but it's still pretty important stuff. So it's how you should train, and just know that this is my opinion, and another swimmer, maybe you're talking to another swimmer who's giving you advice on how to work out, and it's something a little bit different than this, but it seems like it's going to work for you. Just know that both ways can be equally right when right is just graduating school. So just keep that in mind. What I was doing for kind of the overarching kind of type of training, or this type of training, was kind of a triathlon style workout or set of workouts where I would be doing a lot of swimming, running, and some cycling to kind of mix it up, but mostly just swimming and running, mixed in with PT, of course, and some weights. But a typical workout, say if I went to the pool on a given day, I would do like a little warm up, and then I would go into some sort of cardio run workout where either I'm doing a long, slow run, a kind of tempo run at like a moderate pace, a little bit slower than my goal 1.5 mile pace, or I do some sort of sprint workout where I was doing 400 meter repeats on a track, or 1 mile repeats, or 200 meter repeats with a little bit of rest. And it just depended on the day and what my training goal for the week or month was. So I would start a workout like that. And then immediately after that, I would just like grab some water and I would jump in the pool, and I would do a warm-up swim, and my warm-up was always a 500 meter swim. And I like to do 500 meter swims every time because the 500 meters is what your PT test is, and you do a ton of 500 meter swims in A school, and if you make it just part of your routine, it's going to seem just automatic, and you're just going to go into the swim and not even think about it. It might seem kind of long to you right now, but if you implement it into your workout and kind of make it a part of your routine, a habit, it just becomes automatic. So I'd do my 500 meter, then I would do my kind of core portion of the workout would be focused around speed or endurance, the same way with running. I would be doing 100 meter, 50 meter sprints with a certain amount of rest time, usually like 10 to 20 seconds. And then I would, if I was working on a certain skill, maybe I was working on side stroke or buddy toe, I would have a dive break or a friend, and I would tow them around and do a workout formatted on that. I'm not going to go into specific workouts just because this isn't really a good platform for that. And if you're interested, I post a ton on my Instagram page, and I even have just entire workout plans. You can check out my website. So after that kind of core portion of the workout, I would start water confidence. And this is what's kind of important. So you need to find a pool that is at least 10 feet deep if you want to maximize your water confidence and get it to a point where it's going to have to be during A school. So a lot of people message me talking about how they can't find a deeper pool. They're in a 5-foot pool and they ask for shallow water confidence drills. And I've covered a ton of them on previous episodes, but you're really limited in what you can do. When you have a 12 feet or a 10 to 12 foot pool, you can do all the drills that you're going to have to do in A school. So you can practice lap tracers, buddy bricks, you can do bobbing, you can do the deeper underwater laps just to kind of get used to that, the difference in pressure. So if you're training in a shallow pool, try to find a deep pool. I had to drive almost, it was about a 45 to hour drive when I was a non-rate in the Florida Keys. I had to get in my car after work and drive an hour just to get a deep enough pool where I can get a proper workout in. So that's kind of the structure of a pool workout. So you do like a nice warm-up, 500 meter swim. Sometimes I would do like a 500 meter half and half, which is kind of lengthy, but if you know what half and halves are, they're just underwater for the half the pool length and then over the surface for the other half. And you repeat that for however many meters. So I would do 500 meter half and halves, or I would do a 500 meter swim, do my core session, whichever the primary focus of that day was. So speed or endurance or some strength sometimes with the buddy towing. And then I do a water confidence session. And that's a typical pool day. And I'd probably go to the pool 3 to 4 times a week, depending on my week, my work week, because I was at a small boat station. So we worked 2 days on, 2 days off. So like a Monday, Tuesday, if I had to work on a Monday, Tuesday, I would be on duty on base for those 2 days. And then I'd only have Wednesday, Thursday off. And then Friday morning, I'd have to be in work for the entire weekend. So on a week like that, I actually only got to go to the pool twice on Wednesday, Thursday. And so that's kind of a bummer if you're trying to get in the pool a lot. But on the back end, on the other week, you'd be off on Monday morning. So you'd have Monday, Tuesday off. Then you work Wednesday, Thursday, and then you'd have the weekend off. So you can get at least 5 days in that week. So you can kind of like backload it based on your work schedule. And I know if you're in the Coast Guard or any of the services, you know your schedule is definitely unique and not normal to like, or conducive necessarily to working out all the time and being on a good schedule, but you just got to get that time in. So with that, I'm going to end the podcast for today. If you enjoyed the show, go to the Apple podcast page and leave a rating and review. If you're interested in some of the workout programs that I have, go to rsmguide.com and check them out. They're pretty interesting. I run them through a website that allows me to basically send the workouts to your email on a weekly basis or daily basis. And it also has like a cool little chat feature where you can send me kind of direct messages. It's kind of like a Facebook setup where you can type into a little IM chat box and I can kind of respond to that based on like random questions you have with the workouts. So go check that out if you're interested. And that's all I have for today. I will talk to you on Wednesday. Be good.